The content in this program is for informational purposes only. You should not construe any information or other material as investment, financial, tax, or other advice. The views expressed by the participants are solely their own. A participant may have taken or recommended any investment position discussed, but may close such position or alter its recommendation at any time without notice. Nothing contained in this program constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, endorsement, or offer to buy or sell any securities or other financial instruments in any jurisdiction. Please consult your own investment or financial advisor for advice related to all investment decisions. Don't forget to follow at Lead Lag Report on Twitter to join these conversations live. And check out the Lead Lag Report at www.leadlagreport.com. Use promo code PODCAST30 for 2 weeks free and 30% off to get access to award-winning research and anticipate stock market crashes, corrections, and bear markets. And now, on to our Lead Lag Live discussion hosted by Michael Guyon.
Some of you may be aware now I'm re-releasing effectively all of the prior spaces in podcast format. Just got accepted on Apple. It's already on Spotify. So any help in spreading the word on that would be much appreciated. My name is Michael Guyon, publisher of the Lead Lag Report. It's joining me for the hour, David Brady. Now, David, you and I have been interacting a little bit over the last several years, but I think first time you and I have spoken before, and I talked to so many people, I can barely remember my own name, honestly. But introduce yourself to the audience as far as who you are, how'd you get involved in markets, why in particular the precious metal space, and what do you do now?
Okay, so this could be a long-winded conversation, but I'll keep it short. So I've been interested in financial markets since I took part in competition since I was 12 years old. And by the way, I'm from Dublin, Ireland. My accent probably gives it away. I started as a dollar mark, Deutsche Mark trader, which ages me. I spent 25 years working on both the banking side and the corporate side in Europe and the US, managing multi-billion dollar portfolios and everything from bonds, stocks, forex, commodities, and futures. And for companies such as eBay, Salesforce, First Solar. I retired at 44 from the corporate world and did pretty well, which enabled me to do that. And now I write primarily on precious metals for SilverChartistPro.com and SprottMoney.com. But you can also find me on Twitter under the handle @GlobalProTrader, where I share my views on the markets and the world in general. And I make a point of keeping it simple so everyone gets it.
Okay, let's go to the portfolio management experience for a moment. What was the nature of the strategy? How'd you go about constructing those portfolios?
Well, it was basically about risk aversion first and foremost. And I employ basically a macroeconomic view, a top-down view. And the key aspect of that was avoiding any major drawdowns on the portfolio. So, for example, in 2007, 2008, there was major turmoil going on. And the portfolio that we had at, where was it? First Solar was entirely invested in auction rate securities. Now, the banks would tell us that those were gilt-edged, you know, no risk. But as an Irishman, you know, we know that you don't get something for nothing. And we were getting a 7% yield. So I went and I read the prospectus and found a line in there that said basically that if the auction failed, you were left hanging. You're left stuck with the bond that you bought. Now, if nobody wants it, you're stuck with it. Well, we had well over $1 billion in that. So I was in Ireland on Christmas Eve 2007 in my daughter's old bedroom, calling my boss, the CFO, to say, hey, look, I think we need to get out of these things as soon as possible, dump them. And the reason for that was I had just read in the FT that one auction had failed in London. And my two cents was this. It wasn't prescient on my part. It was simple scenario analysis, whereby if we keep the portfolio in auction rate securities, we'll earn 7%, but we run the risk that we lose all of our liquidity. We're stuck with bonds that nobody wants. That's a career limiting decision. So what else could we do? We could move it all to boring U.S. treasuries. Agency bonds weren't that great at that point in time. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were in trouble. So I did. I made a recommendation that we move to treasuries. And the first response I got, well, what do they yield? 2%. And he goes, well, that's a big drop in yield. And I said to my boss, okay, we're going to get fired if we're stuck with all of this debt that nobody wants and we don't have the liquidity for our operations and investments. Are we going to be fired because we earned 5% less yield? No. And once I told him that, he said, do it. And despite a lot of pushback from the banks, I told him to sell it all within as fast as possible, basically. On January 13, which was, what, a little over 2 weeks later, the entire auction rate market collapsed in London. So it turned out to be a prescient decision. But that gives you an example of how I look at it, the world, and how I manage portfolios, which is you won't get fired for earning a slightly lower yield, but you will get fired for losing your shirt.
You can't necessarily avoid them entirely, right? You're always going to have periods where you miss something in the analysis or your opportunity set is not acting the same way that it was before. How do you think about this? You know, when you have stocks and treasuries having the same drawdown, you can't really do anything except go through the drawdown periods where your analysis take a more defensive posture, but that defensive posture is seemingly isn't working.
At the end of the day, I'm talking about end of the world scenarios versus, you know, managing a portfolio, especially for a corporation, such that you focus on what really matters, which is maintaining liquidity and, you know, returns are secondary. If you're managing a portfolio on the banking side, it's not as easy. And you can't literally liquidate a portfolio of bonds and securities and go to cash without getting a few phone calls from investors. But that said, you know, the markets these days are centrally managed. And what I mean by that is it's all about the Fed and to a lesser extent, other central banks. And when I look at why stocks and bonds have been falling together, I just look back at what the Fed did back in July of 2020 when they tapered their QE to $120 billion a month. And then they started talking taper to zero and moving to QT and interest rates. If you take the biggest player out of the market, in other words, reduce liquidity, and we can talk about Ponzi schemes later, but you take away liquidity from the stock market and the bond market in particular, given that there's so few foreign buyers these days, well, they're obviously both going to go down. Now, you're probably a better person to answer this question than I am, than where you run to. But yeah, I think the only thing you can do is to ride it out. But that assumes that the Fed's going to come back in and start printing again. Do we know if that's going to happen or not? No. So you're basically tossing a coin. Is the Fed going to pivot or not? I'm leaning towards they will, and we can get into the big picture view shortly. But the risk that you run if they don't, if this is a 1929 Fed, is it's game over. But it won't be for just one institution. It'll be for all, you know, many institutions. But when we get to the big picture view, I think the worst place to be in the future, the near future, is 401ks and pensions.
Okay, so let's continue with a macro view here. We'll talk about the Fed pivot in a moment, but let's for a bit here because that's been a area. Lay out the case from your vantage point. But if you want to riff on gold a little bit, and then I'll try and come.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hello, listeners. Michael Guyatt here from Lead Lag Live. Are you ready to take a deep dive into market trends, risk management, and investment strategies? Then you need the Lead Lag Report. Our in-depth analysis helps you understand the financial markets like never before. And guess what? We're giving you a chance to experience it at a discounted rate. Visit theleadlag.report/leadlaglive and get an exclusive 30% off on your subscription. Don't miss out. Level up your investment game with the Lead Lag Report. And now, back to our discussion.
Well, I think where you're going to is, you know, the big picture view, and that, you know, that'll pivot into gold nicely. My two cents is, and this is a, you know, most people consider this a conspiracy theory. So just for my sake, just consider my opinion for now. And we can come back to that concept of a conspiracy theory later. But basically, the big picture from my perspective is if you start top down and work your way back, everything else makes sense. So let me start with, like, look, let's look at some of the policies that have been rolled out across the world over the past couple of years. We've had what I call divide and conquer. You know, people are split based on politics, gender, sexual orientation, age, race. And when I signed up for a job, those were all of the things that, you know, you couldn't be persecuted for. And that's being used as a tool to divide us all. Why? Anyway, we can get into that later. But then there was the COVID lockdowns and what that did to small and medium-sized businesses and employment across the US and the rest of the world. We had checks in the mail. I would call a pilot experiment for UBI. Censorship, supply chains breaking down, debt loaded up on governments' balance sheets all over the world. Central banks printing inflation left, right, and center, especially the Fed. They spent $6 trillion after the March 2020 drawdown. And then you had, when COVID tailed off, we had the Ukraine war. Now, inflation was already taking off, but that put it into overdrive. And then you've got the food supply issues associated with that. And then you pivot to the central banks focusing on inflation and raising rates, which push mortgage rates higher. Housing gets hammered, stocks and bonds as well. Savings values are eroded by inflation, the real value of those savings. You know, pensions are getting into trouble now. And now, lastly, we've got climate change, which is potentially restricting our food supply. So why are they pursuing all of these policies? My two cents is this is all with a name for a new world order. And what does that mean? One world government, a new global reserve currency, digital SDR, I call it, central bank digital currencies, and a China-style social credit system. Now, who's going to agree to that? It doesn't sound very attractive. Well, you have to make people completely dependent on the state for survival. That's the only way they would agree to something that they would otherwise reject out of hand. So, well, how do you get them to do that? In my opinion, the only way or the best way to do that, bear with me on this, is to make everyone as destitute and desperate as possible, i.e. broke and starving. So you look at what's happened over the past couple of years, especially when we had the run-up in the stock market and especially the run-up in housing. It sucked everyone into the markets. And the risk is that whether it's sooner or later, depending on the actions of, as I said, the Fed, which is the king of liquidity, if you will, and the other central banks, is that they crash it all. Now, do they do it sooner or later? That depends on the pivot. But I believe the end result's the same. So I've been saying consistently now for quite some time that I expect that the markets are going to collapse in mid to late 2023, latest 2024. And that'll usher in the Great Recession, the Greatest Depression and Great Reset. You will own nothing and be happy. And what do they plan for that? Central bank digital currencies, carbon footprints, mass surveillance, bugs for dinner, you name it. Now, if this sounds like far-fetched, I keep reciting something that the WEF said back in 2020. They do this five-year risk analysis, and they publish that they expected an asset bubble burst, and I quote, in 2023 to 2025. But at the recent Davos meeting, they announced that they were accelerating their Agenda 2030 timeline. So you could curtail that timeline, 2023-25, to 2023-24, which fits well with my estimation that that'll be the time when you see the everything bubble collapse. And so that's the big picture. And when you consider that, and you brought this up earlier, Michael, with regard to stocks and bonds going down together, I mean, that fits in with that analysis. So when the Fed, if the Fed pivots next, you'll get a melt up into 2023, herding the lambs for slaughter one last time. And then we get rampant inflation. What comes next? I believe Fed policies will not function anymore. In other words, simply put, QE, when they print more money, stocks stop going up. It just doesn't work anymore. And ultimately, all it will do is to create more and more inflation. At that point, the Fed will have to pull the plug, and there's your greatest depression, there's your great reset, and there's your new world order.
That does go to the name of the space, because I know that a lot of this stuff can sound extreme and far-fetched, and nobody knows exactly how all this gets resolved. But the one thing everybody can agree on is that the entire system is factually, mathematically insolvent. It's like I always laugh when people talk about the U.S. being the wealthiest nation on earth. But then people seemingly forgot about the liability side.
Yep. And can I add something there, Michael, as well? It's like I like to bring things down to simplistic, simple terms so everything gets it. So as I said at the outset, this is just take this as my opinion. But I'll give you an example. My dad thinks I'm nuts because I'm buying gold and silver and I'm building an off-grid property out in the middle of nowhere. And my response to him was this. Okay, Dad, let's look at the risk-reward here. If I'm wrong, if I am completely nuts, what's the worst that happens? The world goes back to normal, everything's peachy, and I sell my off-grid property at a loss for $200,000 or $300,000 loss, and which is not great, but you know, it's only money. And then the butt of jokes at dinners for the rest of my life. Do you remember that time you went off and you built that off-grid property, David? Ah. If that's the worst, I'm fine with that. But what if I'm right? I'm off-grid, fully self-sufficient, food for the next 10 years, you name it. I'm going to be better off than 99% of the population if this plays out. And I hope it doesn't. I hope I'm wrong. But when you think in those terms, whether you believe this or not, you should prepare for it. My entire life managing money has been about focusing on the worst case scenarios and working back from there. And it served me well. And now we're dealing with, you know, our lives, our kids, the whole nine yards. And I think that's the way you need to look at it. Look at the scenario analysis. What happens to you if you're wrong? I lose a few pennies in my case. But if I'm right, I've got a better chance than the vast majority of the population in terms of getting through this.
Let's go to some of the audience here.
I would question the whole concept that money's flowing into the U.S. in search of yield. I mean, Luke Roman mentioned recently that when you factor in the FX basis to buy U.S. treasuries for foreign countries, it's actually negative to the yield that they're getting at home. So I don't think that's the case. And it also explains why the Fed has been so active in buying bonds. I mean, if you look at China recently, look at their U.S. Treasury holdings. They're dumping them. Russia's already got rid of theirs. There is a dollar shortage in terms of dollar-denominated debt, especially at the corporate level in emerging markets. But I don't see a huge swathe of money coming into the U.S. per se. It may explain the dollar, but you know, I'm with Luke on this one. It's not attractive for those foreign countries to buy U.S. bonds at this time. That may change, but there's bigger factors at play here. And that would be, for example, Russia and China have made it clear. Somebody jump in there? No, Russia and China have made it clear that they want a new global reserve currency. And their actions since then have confirmed that in the sense that they're dumping U.S. treasuries, not buying them. And I don't see a rationale, given that it's not just China and Russia now. It's, you know, India's getting on board, maybe Saudis as well. And they're not taking part in this. So I don't know if that answers your full question, but I don't see that as a big issue right now. No, I don't. I believe that this new global reserve currency is what they want, but they want it to be supranational. They want it to be based on a basket of goods, much like the IMF. Put it simply, it's a hot potato. Nobody wants it for the reasons you just mentioned. Nobody wants to have to run debts to support a global reserve currency. They want a supranational currency. The IMF has talked about a new Bretton Woods. Powell said in March, it's very possible to have a new global reserve currency. And Russia and China have been talking about it since 2009. But it's not about creating a gold-backed yuan as a global reserve currency or a gold-backed ruble. It's about the SDR, because nobody wants it at the end of the day.
Is there, so this kind of goes back to, I put a poll out a little bit earlier, David, on this question of would the economy be better off if we were back to a gold standard? Because even under a global reserve currency basket, it's all still going to be fiat from what I'm hearing from you, which doesn't really solve kind of the core issue of reckless money printing and spending. Play a thought experiment here for us. What would have happened if 1971 didn't occur, if we didn't come off the gold standard? Would there have been less progress for society? Would there have been other types of problems? Because oftentimes the solution that's often spouted is that we need to just get rid of fiat, but there's always unintended consequences with any system.
Yeah, a lot of layers to that question, but I will say this, that what obviously happened post-1971 is it gave the U.S. government license and the Fed, U.S. government license to literally spend at will. They abused their exorbitant privilege, and the Fed facilitated it by printing and buying the debt. And look at where we are now. You've got a massive, at least at the federal level, you got a debt to GDP of well over 100%. But when you include everything else, the corporate level, at the household debt level, the unfunded liabilities, it's dramatically higher than that. I mean, Ray Dalio said back in 2016, this is what, 6 years ago now, that it was 1,000%, 1,100 debt to GDP when you include all of the debt in the US. That is a result that there's no reins on the spending of government and no reins on how much the Fed can print. I mean, just look at their balance sheets. Get them to look at a graph. It says it all. So to answer your question, Michael, we would have been far better off if we stayed with the gold standard that predated World War I and World War II, because those were the most prosperous periods in history. And what it did was it put a rein on politicians to prevent them from being able to print money at will or spend money at will. And therefore, you wouldn't need central banks because it was an automatic mechanism. So I hope that answers your question. I'm a firm believer in the gold standard. But will the powers that be in the world allow for such a gold standard to return? I seriously doubt it. But I do think that if we do introduce a new global reserve currency, say it's an SDR based on a basket of goods, I'm one of the few that believes that they may back it partially with gold to begin with, to give it confidence, but they can always strip it away later. Look, just like they did in 1971. And prior to that, the previous Bretton Woods, they kept reducing the amount of money that the gold backed from 40% to 20%, and then now it's just pure fiat. Yeah, it's certainly a factor. What's competing with that, though, is on the other side, is you've got more paper chasing fewer goods and services. And the best example of that is in the past 2 years. So you've got technology which is beneficial from a deflationary perspective. And I don't mean a massive deflationary perspective. I mean like something like the classical gold standard when you had deflation of around 1%. That was fine. And again, you had the most prosperous countries and economies. The UK was the world empire for centuries for that very reason. And that all ended when they took the sterling, the pound, off the gold standard with World War I. But yeah, you're right. Technology provides that benefit. But on the other side today, you've got massive monetary printing all over the world. You've got government spending like there's no tomorrow, which makes me wonder, how are they going to wipe the debts clean? And I think that's where this great reset comes in. But I go off topic. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. But there's a lot of forces on the other side pushing inflation higher and higher and higher. And I believe in the short term, just for this quick anecdote or comment, that we have a period of inflation is not, you can't look at inflation as just one big bubble. You have to break down the parts. Food inflation is through the roof, and they're making it worse by curtailing the supply. What's happened to the supply chains around the world? I said back in March 2020 that the pop in gold and silver and meat prices and lumber, that was going to become pervasive and widespread. Because these supply chain issues are not going to remain restricted to a few sectors. It's going to become widespread. It's going to hit everything. And here we are. And I don't think that's going to get much better very soon. But in the short term, we have a glut of inventories here in the US. Oil's come off down to the mid-80s. Basically, the only thing that's going ballistic right now is food. But everything else is either in disinflation, or if you look at Target or Walmart or Restoration Hardware, you got outright deflation because they're trying to get rid of all of this product. But once that is out of the way, and if the Fed pivots, it's going to make it even worse, you're going to get rampant inflation next year. And technology will have little to do with it. Well, it's then we're getting into a demand and supply discussion. You know, first of all, is this population going to work? Is it going to play out? Certainly in China, you're going to get population over time. But, that's a difficult one to answer. because if at least today, yes, we've got a demographic nightmare coming in terms of a lot more older people relative to younger people. But we also have supply challenges on the other side. So will those supply challenges end? Not if the people who have been managing the world for the past couple of years get their way. But if supply increases, then yeah, you'll get deflation. I mean, it's a very hard one to answer because it's a very hypothetical discussion. You and I could sit down for about like a day and argue back and forth on that one.
Real quick, and I'll bring you back. Just for everybody's here again, I apologize for my internet issues in the beginning, but make sure that you follow David here on Twitter. As you can tell, very thoughtful in the way he views the world. And whether you agree or disagree, the most important thing is that everybody's here listening. And that's sort of my real objective with these spaces. Again, my name is Michael Gayet, publisher of the Lead Lag Report. You mentioned, David, things that are going ballistic. You didn't mention the dollar, which has been going ballistic, relative, obviously, right? We can talk about debasement from here to tomorrow. But I'm curious to hear your assessment of the dollar's strength or everything else's weakness, especially the last week or so, because it looked like the dollar maybe had a blow off top and now it's pretty much sitting back at the highs.
Yeah, that was puzzling in the very, very short term, why it suddenly ran up. Did somebody change their opinion on what the FOMC said? I don't know. I have my doubts. But to answer your question, the dollar, I believe, is going up because the Fed is the only one, well, the ECB raised rates 50 basis points. And I know you're not a big believer in this interest rate differential. Neither am I right now because the world has changed. I'm more interested in the balance sheet than I am in what the interest rate is. I mean, both of them are important, but I think QE and QT are much more important than the latest Fed funds rate. And I believe that the Fed, taking their foot off the accelerator on money printing and suggesting that they would do QT, I don't see any meaningful reduction of the balance sheet. But relative to what's happening in Europe and certainly in Japan, which is still doing full-blown QE to buy the debt to keep the yields down, when you look at the various monetary policies, and don't get stuck in the weeds on the, the interest rate differential, you see that the Fed has stopped at least or paused on their money printing. ECB, despite all of its comments to the contrary, are still doing some and certainly supporting Italian debt, and they're probably the periphery as well. And Japan is openly doing full-blown QE still. When you look at that, if they're the only three options and you're trying to buy a currency, which one would it be? It would be obviously the dollar, because the other ones are inflating away their currency. But as I've said multiple times in tweets, and forgive me for saying this, but I get tired of hearing people say that the dollar is going up. Yes, I see it on the screen. It's going up against the dollar, against the euro, and against the yen, and the Dixie's going up as a result. But as you said, Michael, it's all relative. But every single one of them is being devalued. It's just that the dollar is being devalued at a slower rate than the other two. And that's why it looks strong. They're all being devalued. And you can see that with, commodity prices have come off, oil's come off. But let's see where they are in about a year's time.
By the way, the Iron Sheik agrees with you. That will not. Anyway, sorry, David.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, I'll speak for myself and take it as you will. I've said to my wife, as soon as I see them starting to roll out military or police checkpoints to further restrict mobility, gone. Pack your bags, we're going up north. That's where I am. But I want to address your comment about we're screwed. Not necessarily, in my opinion, because a lot of people have woken up to COVID and the vaccines. And I have to be careful with what I say here, but I'll cite a statistic. The CDC just said there a week ago that 70% of the U.S. population are either unvaccinated or have single vaccine or double vaxxed. That's it. And if you consider that, given boosters have been around for a year now, and yet 70% of the population have decided not to get the booster, that tells you something. And it also explains why the CDC basically threw in the towel on COVID there a few days ago. So that's people waking up, in my opinion, to what's going on. See, the problem that we have in the world is this simple. I call it denial. Well, use a euphemism I like. Nobody wants to believe in the boogeyman, even when he's staring at you from the end of your bed. I mean, it's better to believe that the government is benevolent and they're doing their best, despite all evidence to the contrary. But I think people are waking up. And so I don't necessarily believe, I listened to, Michael, your discussion with Mark Moss yesterday. And while I disagreed with some of the things he said, I firmly agree with him that basically that the people are waking up. I forget he made a very good point at one point. It'll come back to me. But yeah, I don't think we're UCK'd, to be honest. I think he mentioned the 250-year cycle of revolutions. And whether it's violent or peaceful, I don't know. But I don't think all is not lost.
No, but hold on. Going back to your earlier point, David, that, you know, from a portfolio manager hat perspective, right, when you put that hat on, you do have to think about what if we're fucked, right? Because that is the drawdown, right? So that's the tail. It goes back to the earlier part of the conversation.
Yeah, and that's why I focus on the worst case scenario and work back from there. As I said to the wife, all of this money we are plowing into this off-grid property to make it completely self-sufficient with diverse energy sources, yada, yada, yada. And she's like, well, we're spending a lot of money on this. I said, yeah, but, you know, it's so we're safe and so forth. Well, what if everything turns out to be rosy? And as I said, well, that would be great. The world's back to normal. Fantastic. We lose a few pennies. Who cares? What's the alternative? Do nothing? Sit here and hope for the best? No, thank you. Oh, mid to late 2023, I mean, the WEF put it out there back in 2020. And they said the asset bubble burst from 2023 to 25. And, you know, let's not fool ourselves. The stock market is basically the economy in the U.S. And whatever happens in the U.S. is going to hit the rest of the world. So that would be my best guess is around mid to late next year. But a lot of things are going to happen ahead of that. But that's when I think it gets really hairy. So I'm not far away from you. We could probably go for a beer. So I've been talking about this for like 6 months. And the answer I got from most of the retail real estate guys was, oh, it's low inventories. Yeah, that's supply. What happens to demand? And Michael, you'll like this because you've been talking about it later. One of the first indicators for me was lumber peaking. Because I'm well aware that if you look back at cycles in lumber and you look at the real estate market, lumber usually predicts it 3 to 6 months in advance.
Please say it louder for everybody else. It drives me insane how people say it's so strange I focus on lumber relative to gold and they tweet from their homes. Like it's mind-numbing. It's like the invisible gorilla, right? It's like it's right in front of you, but they can't see it. They think it's a strange concept, but housing is the biggest driver of economic activity, full stop. And you're right. And I've proven this quantitatively. Lumber does tend to move in advance of major expansions and major contractions because of the link to housing as a driver of the economy, risk sentiment, credit creation, so on and so forth. Anyway, sorry.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Foodies unite with How You Dish. It's social media with a secret sauce. Food, the world's first network for food enthusiasts. How You Dish connects foodies across the world. Share kitchen tips and recipe hacks. Discover hidden gem food joints and street food. Find foodies like you. Connect, chat, and organize meetups. How You Dish makes it simple to connect through food anywhere in the world. So, how do you dish? Download How You Dish on the Apple App Store now.
Now, it sounds very complicated, doesn't it, Mike?
Wildly, apparently.
Sorry, but yeah, you're absolutely correct. Look, I did get into my process, and I'm not going to get into it in depth, but it's called FIPES, Fundamentals, Intermarket Analysis, Positioning, Elliott Waves, Sentiment, and Technicals. And I also include XM, Excluding Manipulation. But the way I perfected that was I went back to every peak and trough in 2006 on every asset, not just gold and silver. I looked at lumber, and that's when it came out to me, wow, these guys are predicting what happens in the real estate market like 3 to 6 months in advance. Now, it wasn't that fast this time or that prescient this time. It was like about a month or two. But I've been banging the table about housing's going down the toilet since January, February. And I was getting naysayers. And here we are. So to answer your question, again, it's all about the Fed. And that includes Canada, because the Bank of Canada and the Fed are basically fused at the hip. It's just that the Bank of Canada announces their interest rates first. But if the Fed pivots, well, then we might get another pop in the real estate market. And if we get inflation associated with that too, rampant inflation, you could see a new high. The problem I run into with housing as opposed to stocks, stocks move easily. They're much more liquid. So I could see them hitting a higher high more so than housing. The other thing that you have with housing is once bitten, twice shy. A lot of people, as you just mentioned, are getting hosed right now. And it's not just with regard to their mortgages and the drop in the value of their properties. It's HELOCs as well. That's a debacle. It's just horrific what's going on. You're seeing people having to pay 2 to 3 times what they paid like 3 months ago. So I never claimed to be that prescient going out 12 months. But you could see, I do see another rally. The question is, do we get back to the highs that we just saw? I don't know. But stocks, if we do get a Fed pivot, I think we're going to get a melt up that pushes it to a new higher high to draw in more lambs for slaughter. But housing is a tougher one to call.
Yeah, and housing's slower moving, obviously, relative to equity. So there's a longer lead time. And I'm glad you mentioned the intermarket analysis point, because anybody that does any form of analysis, any form of strategy testing will have periods where what they're doing is not working, even though the causation around the relationship remains the same. The causation in the case of lumber is housing, right? Going back to that point about interest rates, there is a clear link between lumber weakness historically and falling rates. Why? Because if it goes back to housing, if lumber is telling you that housing is going to slow down, that means demand for mortgages will slow down, which means there has to be a drop in yield on the cost of capital on 30-year treasuries, which is what mortgage rates are based off of. But again, all this is lost when people just see a chart, right? Yeah. In the here and now.
Yeah, but you're familiar with loss aversion, Michael, and whether it's a stock, buying FX, whatever. People see, you know, the value of what they're holding drop, say, 20, 30, 40, 50%. They'll hold it forever. I saw it in the dot-com bubble. People who had made like 20x their initial investment and they ran it down to zero. What they do when it gets back to where they bought it, if they have incurred a loss, is they typically sell. That's why they always lose. When it goes down 50% and they get their money back, they sell. Apply that to the housing market. If you bought a property recently in the GTA for $2 million and now it's worth 1.2, and then you see it go back up to 2 after suffering that harrowing experience, what do people typically do? They sell. Say, I'm out now. I'm going to get something smaller or whatever. They don't go back to the gambling table a second time. That's why I say it's slightly different with housing, because it impacts so many people. And be honest, I don't know how to put this, but people who are being stupid about it. I mean, people who are in the stock market and, you know, in futures in particular, you know, many of those have at least some understanding of how the markets work. But those who are buying houses and buying more than they can afford, you know, they don't know what they're doing. And they're certainly not looking at the macro environment when they're doing it.
And it's easier to leverage. I mean, that's also the big part, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
It creates more mistakes, you can argue.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem with the whole world at the time, was that money was cheap and easily available. So every Tom, Dick, and Harry, I remember when I was trying to buy a property for my house and for my brother in Dublin back in 2005. And I walked into with Bank of Ireland. I said, oh, I'm thinking of buying a property. I was looking at a mortgage. Didn't ask me my name. Just says, how much do you want? Are you going to 400,000 euros? He says, oh, you probably need 440 then, because you have to buy furniture and appliances as well. Okay. When do you plan to buy this? Oh, I don't know. I'm just looking around. Well, just let us know. We'll make it happen. Okay. You haven't asked me my name. You haven't asked me my income. You haven't asked me where I live. I told him my background.
You have a very trustworthy smile. That's what they...
I don't know about that. But my point is, I went home to my parents and said, sell your house now. You'll be able to buy it back in 2 years for less than half that you bought it, and less than half the price today. And of course, they liked their where they were and so forth. It dropped 70%. It's just like when somebody offers you free money and they don't do any kind of credit check whatsoever, and they're literally handing it out. Oh, and the one thing I forgot to mention is this. Well, what about the risk that they go down? Oh, houses never go down. And that's when I ran home and told my parents, sell your property right now. But yeah, unfortunately, that's the state of the market when it's in a boom. And I find this in everything that I do. My process is data-based. So more often than not, I'm the one at the top that's going, when everybody's euphoric, sell. Because I'm looking at data telling me it's extreme overbought, it's extreme bullish. The positioning clearly shows that it's going to go south. You know, it's hitting resistance, whatever. And people go, you don't know what you're talking about. And then when we go down to the lows, everybody's throwing in their towel and gold and silver right now. I'm screaming, this is the most bullish period right now for the past 3 years, going back to, or even 4 years, going back to August 2018. You could argue March 2020, but that was brief. But August 2018, 1167. Look at where it went from there. New record highs. And now we are back down, getting hammered again, but everything is screaming, go up. So I tend to be a contrarian by nature, but it's not based on emotion. Emotion's a death of wealth. It's based on data. Just look at the data at previous peaks and troughs and ignore what people are saying. But unfortunately, not many people do that.
Definitely not on Twitter. And again, everybody, please make sure you follow David here on Twitter. Yeah, so maybe, so I guess the question is QT really what's happening? Or if it's just sort of a term that's not really accurate relative to the actions?
Yeah, talk is cheap, but not when it comes to the Fed. People hang on every word. So talk tends to be sufficient to get the market to move one way or the other. But all too often, actions tell you something very different. I think I said that earlier on during this conversation, in that, you know, they're saying they're to keep doing QT, but anybody can go onto the web and look at, you know, get the Fed chart. And if they're doing any, it's minuscule. So are they lying? I don't want to say that they're lying, but all I know is the data says otherwise. I take what they say with a grain of salt. But what you do have to take into consideration is their actions, because they are the liquidity provider and liquidity drives everything these days, because these markets are all centrally managed. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I would say that the answer to your question is just take what they say with a grain of salt and wait to see them follow through, because I see exactly the same things you see. Well, I can get Mike. He's probably better suited to answer that question, but I'll just make my two cents on it. That to me suggests that there's a concern about counterparty risk within the banking system. And they're running
not a collateral, exactly right.
Yeah, so that's another warning signal for what's coming. And by the way, I do want to finish up before we go to just give a few brief points why I don't sell gold and silver. There's no rhyme or reason for me to say this, just that I want as many people to own this going into what's coming, because it could be your lifesaver. And there's multiple reasons for that. But I can save that to later. But I just wanted to get that plug in.
David, do you mind if we do two more questions and then we wrap up, or do you have a hard stop?
No, go ahead. No, I see quick and dirty. I see bonds rallying here very soon, whether it's on disinflation or deflation. But then unless the Fed pivots to cap yields, I think the bond bull market in bonds is over and they're going to go even higher. Michael, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, it's also, you have to be careful in terms of saying bonds. It's like, which bonds, right? I mean, you could have spreads blow out and stay elevated, which means high yield sells off while treasuries maybe hold and maybe go back to that safe haven risk off behavior. It's important though, like, you know, when you talk about the interaction of stocks to bonds, it's really about that sequence of returns. I keep going back to that point. Generally, in high volatility periods in equities, treasuries end up being the quote-unquote safe haven, not this year, clearly. But yes, you could probably have a rally in bonds, and hopefully that coincides with the stock market decline this time around. And then stocks maybe hold, rally, as bonds keep on selling off. It's the interplay of the two, which is what matters from a portfolio management perspective. That's what's been so off this year, more of a side note. I don't know if you'd want to add something to that before I go to another audience here, right, David?
No, I was speaking to U.S. Treasuries, but I think they rally in the short term, and I think that they actually, unfortunately, could go up together, especially if the Fed pivots, because on the one hand, that liquidity finds its way into stock market, as we've seen since 2008, and on the other hand, they're doing QE, so they're buying bonds.
I will say real quick on that point, I keep making this point that if you look at when small caps bottomed and Treasury yields topped, intraday it happened the same day, which is June 16th, which is pretty much a week after energy stocks peaked. So it's not that whatever rally, whatever you want to call melt up this move since mid-June, I'd argue it's not because of a Fed pivot narrative, but because of an oil pivot narrative.
Sorry, can you go back to the original question?
Could you hit new highs without a Fed pivot? I mean,
Yes. I mean, look, when I say a Fed pivot, I mean a pause. They don't have to cut rates. The markets are forward looking in that sense that if they see a pause, I mean, that's basically what Powell said in December 2018. He didn't say they were going to cut rates. He just said, like, we're closer to neutral than we thought we were. You know, you just see the markets take off from that point. And if they follow up with QE, they'll go even higher. So, no, you don't need rates to come off. You just need a pause. The markets will do the rest.
I think that's a good place to... Yeah, go ahead, Dave. Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to do a little plug on Gold and Silver and Why.
Yeah, please.
I believe they're the new Tina. There is no alternative. Them and farmland. There's the only assets you should own, tangible assets. U.S. massive debt and unfunded liabilities can't be repaid. No politician will default outright, so they'll have to inflate it away via the printing press or the revaluation of gold or a debt jubilee, not just in the U.S., but globally. All that means much higher prices for gold and silver while all else has collapsed. So it's not just in currency terms. If stocks collapse, housing collapses, bonds collapse, cash is being devalued dramatically. The only place you can run to is tangible assets like gold, silver, and farmland. There's a reason why Bill Gates is buying a lot of it. They can't be printed. They're outside the fragile banking system, which I expect to collapse as well. All retail banking is going to be centralized at the central banks if they get their way. They rise in extremes of inflation and deflation. On top of that, you got China and Russia have been loading up on gold for over a decade. China doesn't allow 1 ounce out of the country. It's illegal. It's been buying mines all around the world to complement their already massive domestic production of 400 tons per year. They're the biggest producer in the world, and draining gold from the West via imports through Switzerland and London. Simple math says they have close to 20,000 tons of gold today versus the 1,900 they say officially. Other central banks are buying too all around the world or repatriating gold that they already own, such as Germany. JP Morgan is the biggest hoard of physical silver in the world. Think about that. And it's not because it's shiny. And the best part is it's ridiculously undervalued historically relative to things like stocks and housing. Look at gold and silver relative to the S&P or Dow or the median home price, and it'll tell you a story. And go look at what it was in 1980 and where it could, that's where it could go. And if they roll out UBI or MT as part of their great reset, either before or thereafter, I'd at the end of the day, follow the smart money. And the smart money is buying up gold left and right. The premiums, you see gold and silver at lows on the paper market. Go look at the premiums. Silver, you have to pay over 50% premium to buy a silver coin in the physical market. That tells you what the real price is.
I think we'll save that for another conversation with me where I can get Peter Zion and a couple of the guys like you together in a space. Everybody here, again, please make sure you follow David. Again, I apologize for the internet connection issues I had at the beginning. I will have this as an edited podcast soon enough. David, really do appreciate your knowledge, and I hope it was thoughtful for everybody here in the audience, and we'll be in touch. Everybody, thank you, and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you, David.
Thanks, Michael.
The content in this program is for informational purposes only. You should not construe any information or other material as investment, financial, tax, or other advice. The views expressed by the participants are solely their own. A participant may have taken or recommended any investment position discussed, but may close such position or alter its recommendation at any time without notice. Nothing contained in this program constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, endorsement, or offer to buy or sell any securities or other financial instruments in any jurisdiction. Please consult your own investment or financial advisor for advice related to all investment decisions. Don't forget to follow at LeadLag Report on X, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube, and check out the LeadLag Report at www.leadlagreport.com. Use promo code PODCAST30 for 2 weeks free and 30% off to get access to award-winning research and anticipate stock market crashes, corrections, and bear markets.